This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
2019 marks some stark anniversaries. 500 years since Hernan Cortes began the brutal conquest of Mexico. 100 years since the 19th Amendment guaranteed women the right to vote. 75 years since D-Day. 50 years since Stonewall. And 30 years since the first episode of Cops. Bad boys, what you want? Meaning there have been three decades of traffic stops, foot chases, drug busts, shirtless, drunken ravings on porches, dazed suspects sitting on curbs, and a lot of sirens. Not to mention a whole menu of similar copsy cat shows, which you could look at as a 30-year-old ride-along, allowing the public to see what police work is really like. Or, if you're Dan Taberski, host of the podcast Running From Cops, you could look at it as a highly conflicted, highly distorted, and highly exploitative genre that has warped our understanding of law enforcement and of the law itself. Dan, welcome to OTM.
Oh, thanks for having me.
First of all, even before you undertook this podcasting project, you watched a lot of Cops. How much exactly?
Oh, my gosh. I'd been watching it for years. My best guesstimate is like 500 episodes. It's very often on 15, sometimes 20 times a day. So it's perfect for somebody who watches television as background noise, which is how I grew up. And I've always just found it really compelling. You know, it's hugely problematic, but it's still a look at a world that you don't see much of anywhere else on television. So, yeah, I watched a lot of it. Sorry.
And having seen so many episodes, you've divined the formula, a pretty rigid formula that's made the show and the genre so popular from the beginning. Can you take us through what a typical episode looks like?
Yeah, it's super simple. An episode is three segments, three different interactions between the police and real citizens. So each interaction is about 7 minutes long. The producers have told me that usually it breaks down a little bit more specifically, that the first segment is usually the most exciting one, like a chase.
Get on the ground! Get on the ground! Get on the ground! Get on the ground!
The second one is usually something that might be a little more comedic or interesting.
I'm sorry, I might have a knife, but that's
it. Don't reach for your knife. Is it in your bra?
I'm not sure where it is, to be completely honest with you. But
you're supposed to potentially laugh at the people that they're arresting and the things that they're doing. And the third is the one that they say is the thinkiest, like it's supposed to make you think.
It's an eerie feeling when you hear the call come out, officer shot, you know, but luckily, I think he's going to be all right, and we got the suspect in custody, and he'll never do this again.
And there's certain tropes, certain standard elements that you can just count on. I mean, you know that because you've amassed the data.
Yes, we watched 846 episodes of the show and broke it down by type of crime, gender, race, to see what sort of patterns you might see in a show like Cops, not by watching it once or twice, but over the course of 30 years. It presents a world that is much more scary than the real world. It has three times the amount of drug arrests than the real world, four times the amount of violent crime, 10 times the amount of prostitution. Those things together make up 58% of what's on the show. It's basically on the show, it's the core of what police do. But in real life, it's barely 17%.
So the notion that the show somehow represents routine police work or anything like routine police work is flawed from the get-go. You've calculated, among other things, that 92% of traffic stops on Cops and an arrest.
Yep.
And so what's the average in the untelevised real world?
2%.
And then you mentioned drugs.
Yeah, drugs. 35% of arrests on cops are for drugs, which makes sense. It started when the war on drugs basically ramped up. And so they really sort of exploited the certain type of policing that went with the war on drugs.
And how does that compare to overall drug arrests?
In real life, it's three times less. So overall, drug arrests are about 12% of all arrests made. And they've been steadily declining since 2006 in this country. But on cops, they only get greater. So in the last season, 44% of all arrests on the show or for drugs.
All right. So the producers manipulate reality. They generate storylines and they amplify drama.
Mm.
So does The Bachelorette. So does Survivor. But I guess The Bachelorette doesn't document encounters between actual police and the actual public.
I've been a reality show producer, so I've made reality shows for a living. So I understand that reality shows aren't, in fact, completely real, that the drama is often trumped up. But usually the people who are participating in those shows understand that. In a show like Cops, we're not talking about housewives. We're not talking about duck hunters. We're talking about something that's actually real, policing, and how the way you portray it, if it doesn't actually represent what's really happening, it can really skew not just the way citizens see policing and what they believe that police can actually do, but what police themselves believe that they can actually do. You know, you hear it on Cops all the time. The cops on Cops are becoming cops because of Cops. It's been on for 30 years. They see the show. They get inspiration from it. They want to be a part of that action, and they become cops. But part of how they see policing is because of what they've seen on the show.
So yeah, it's like why Major League Baseball players spit in the batter's box. Nobody's chewed tobacco for 25 years or 45, but they grew up watching their heroes spit, who grew up watching tobacco chew or spit. So now it's like ritual.
It's part of the way you act. It's part of the way you interact with citizens. For a lot of the people who are becoming police officers is because of what they have seen on Cops year after year after year.
And the distortion that you're describing manifests in a number of ways.
Mm.
One is, as you said, the world is portrayed as endless mayhem,
mm-hmm.
which it actually isn't. And the cameras and the producers there on the scene to develop storylines as they're kind of playing out also distorts the very nature of police-public interactions. You interview on your show an ex-cop named Joe Petroselli.
Yeah, Joe Petroselli was a cop in New Jersey, and he was on the show maybe about 10 years ago. He was working in the projects, doing a lot of drug busts, low-level users. The type of manipulation that he witnessed was basically he would effectuate an arrest.
I was making my arrests in like 2 or 3 minutes.
A cop segment is 7 minutes long.
So they told me, basically, Joe, you have to get this guy out of the car, talk to him a little bit, see if you could, you know, maybe drag this out a little bit so we could use this episode.
Step out, bud. Look nervous as hell, man. You crying? What's your name?
Which is extremely rare, sir. I never do that. I would never take, for the safety of myself and the safety of the criminal actor, I would never remove him at the scene. But they wanted it done, so we kind of took him out. And I talked to him about his drug problem.
There are these little storytelling things that you would do in a normal reality show along the way that when you're dealing with real people and real police officers, it becomes a whole different game.
Now, this is ostensibly a win-win-win. The audience gets its gritty police action.
Mm-hmm.
The producers get some irresistible video. And the cops, the police departments that are participating, get favorable portrayals.
Mm-hmm.
But that, as you observe more than once in your series, is a transaction. How explicit is the cooperation between police departments and the producers? Do those departments, for example, have veto power on segments if they don't like the way the cops involved come off?
Contractually, the police departments sign a contract with the producers of Cops, and the producers of Cops are obligated to give the police departments rough cuts of the show, of what's going to air, a couple weeks before, and the police departments can say yay or nay to whatever they see on the show. So in effect, they're not just the subjects of this sort of reality show, they're partly producing it.
Mm. Which begins to raise the question of, are you watching reality or are you watching propaganda?
Yeah, propaganda is a strong word, but I think after 18 months of looking into the show, I would absolutely use it. It's the police departments who participate in the show are doing it because they want to be portrayed a certain way, and the show never fails to portray them in that way.
Hmm. Well, that solves one mystery. in 30 years, I know of no case in which something truly disturbing was broadcast on a police reality show. Is this just an amazing coincidence? Is it just because everybody knows there's cameras there and they're on their best behavior? Or do you think that the producers are actually colluding in the so-called blue wall of silence?
I think there's a few things going on here. I think the producers know that, A, the police departments get final cut. They get veto power. So they're not going to even try to put anything in the show that the police departments don't want them to put in, because it's just going to get taken out anyway by the police. And they need to maintain these relationships with the police departments who they're shooting with. Cops have shot with over 150 police departments around the country in the past 30 years. And some many, many, many times. Palm Beach, Florida has been on 15 times. Vegas has been on 21 seasons of the show. They need to maintain these relationships with the officers. I will also say that there is police malfeasance. There is bad behavior by police on the show all the time, to a lesser scale, that the police choose to leave in.
You're actually anticipating my very next question. Let's, as you said, put aside actual cover-up and just discuss plain misleading information. How does it get in there, and what's the consequence of reality TV showing cops actually being cops in the wrong way?
In Wichita, Kansas, there is a segment of cops where a police officer pulls somebody over.
Yeah, he's got a cracked windshield, so we're going to be able to stop him here.
Because he thinks he has drugs, and he thinks the guy is hiding the drugs in his mouth. He then uses the butt end of his flashlight to pry the man's mouth open.
Spit it out. I'm telling you right now, you're gonna spit it out, okay? Uh-huh. Okay? Stick out your tongue. Stick out your tongue.
And this isn't just a tiny little flashlight. It's a big flashlight. And the officer is jamming a good 3 inches of it into this man's mouth.
If you bite me, we're going to have some serious problems. You understand me? Uh-huh. Do you understand me?
To get the drugs out of his mouth, which when you bring to a use of force expert, which we did, he'll tell you that you can't do that.
Totally unconstitutional. That's completely bad policing. There's even a Supreme Court case, Rochin versus California, that says that, which deal almost deal with the same specific thing. And the courts have said that obtaining evidence in a manner that shocks the conscience is inadmissible in court. And to do that to an individual, you haven't even arrested him. He's not even under arrest. He's not even completely under your control. You are detaining this individual. And to do that, to put something in his mouth in order to get suspected drugs from under his tongue, is just completely wrong.
But it remains in the show. Another example, in Glendale, Arizona, an officer is chasing a man who was accused of loitering. Just loitering. The guy runs. There's no sign that he has any weapons or anything like that. And the officer tries to tase him in the back. That in itself, tasing a man in the back to effectuate an arrest, is a violation of that police department's own use of force policies. It stays in the show anyway. What happens is that they don't say we shouldn't have done that. In the flashlight case, that segment ends with the sergeant saying,
if that's what he's going to swallow, you probably saved his life.
So it has a way of normalizing behavior that you assume, because you're seeing it on cops, is legal. And very often it's not.
All right, Dan, I have at this stage asked you about 800 questions about cops. But I'm actually more interested in a fairly new show your podcast also covers called Live PD, which makes cops look like a video Yule log.
We just got word from the other crime scene that two individuals are dead, the subject's ex-girlfriend and her father. We're waiting for detectives to come determine if the subject died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound or from the collision of the accident.
If you sit down at 7 o'clock on Friday morning with a cup of coffee and put yourself in front of that television, 39 of the next 48 hours are going to be the show Live PD or one of its spinoffs on the network A&E. It is on all the time. It's basically like Cops meets ESPN.
And right here, what he's doing is that hand on the shoulder, that's a controlling technique that he's trying to use and trying to keep the suspect up against the car.
Now the guy tries to run.
Exactly. Right away, he tries to run.
It's a studio-based show, but what they do is they follow 6 to 8 police departments around the country live, and they basically cut to the different police departments showing what's going on in that precinct.
Let's see what's happening in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's super intense. And what's actually really interesting about it is that only half the country is watching it. So, for example, the El Paso Times has written about live PD 27 times in the past 2 years. The New York Times has written about it once. And it was just in the listing section just to basically say, you know, this is on. It's very pro-police, and it is reaching the audience that wants to hear that message. They fill arenas with fan clubs of the officers on live PD because people want to get their autographs. There are trading cards for the canine officers and the officers who are on live PD, and kids buy them because they're fans of those officers. I think that's really an appealing thing for the police who are participating. Is it appropriate? Is it what we should be wanting from our police? I don't think so. But I think there's an appetite out there for pro-policing narrative, and shows like Live PD are delivering.
The show is hosted by Dan Abrams, who, you know, I think I can say is a serial casher in on audience's appetite for seeing villains made an example of. I talked about Spokane, Washington. Tell me about Spokane, Washington.
We went to Spokane because both cops and Live PD had been shooting in that city, and they basically had it up to here with it. We went to watch and see whether or not they were going to pass a law to effectively kick both shows out of town.
There was one local politician in particular, I think he was a city councilman, who was trying to push this legislation through council, right?
Yeah, the council president's name is Ben Stuckert, and he was trying to make sure that Live PD and cops couldn't shoot in his city anymore. On the one hand, he was doing it because, as people often say about shows like this, you're filming people on the worst day of their life, in the case of Live PD, very often without their permission, and he wants to protect the people in his community. But he also wants to protect their efforts to attract big business to a town like Spokane that's looking to increase their tax base. And they have pro-Spokane commercials, and they're trying to get people to come to this place. And a show like Live PD just is constantly portraying them as drug-addled, violent, scary, dark, weird people without shirts on, getting arrested over and over on cops and Live PD.
On the other hand, you interview the local sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Who insists that the public should see the sort of Grand Theft Auto aspects of the community, what his deputies have to deal with every day out there on the street. And he sees it not only as civic transparency, but as a way for the police to counter what he sees as a narrative, an unfair narrative of brutality, racism, and impunity
mm-hmm.
that he thinks further makes targets of officers and the very people we depend on to keep us safe.
Yeah.
Do you have any sympathy for that?
100%. Yeah. I mean, regardless of what you think about policing or police officers right now, it cannot be easy to be a police officer and feel, especially an honest one, and feel under attack by the people that you see yourself as helping. I'm not saying I agree with his policies. I'm not saying that I agree with the way he views police. But I do think that after talking to the many, many police officers that we talked to who have been on the show and not been on the show, cops and Live PD, I think that one universal theme is that they feel under attack, and it's challenging to do your job in that environment. That being said, it doesn't mean you make citizens props in the propaganda that's supposed to turn that image around.
Not 30 years ago, but 60 years ago, on the Dick Van Dyke Show, there are a couple episodes where Dick Van Dyke, playing Rob Petrie, finds himself in proximity to police.
Mm-hmm.
And he is completely transfixed. He says, "Can I see your gun?" And the cop shows him his gun.
Oh, it's a mean baby, isn't it?
Rob says, 45. 45,
huh?
No, that's 38.
And Rob says,
"Oh, yeah, better have for your purpose."
Which is both meaningless and hilarious. But there's something going on in that moment.
Yeah.
What is happening there, and what is happening on America's sofas when we see those people getting put in handcuffs?
It's access to the exercise of power. I think cops gives you access to a world that is incredibly visceral, that promises or threatens to feel like a life and death matter every time you turn it on. So to have access to that sort of rawness, I think, regardless of how you think they frame policing, regardless of the effect it has on the people who are being policed, regardless of all of that, whether or not you think it's propaganda, I think that sort of visceral television is incredibly compelling to a huge portion of people, myself included.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time on your sofa.
I won't be doing it anymore.
Now, most podcasting just goes out and, you know, we never see any return signal. But you are already finding out that running from cops has had an impact.
Yeah, so far, Cops was scheduled to shoot in Ingham County, Michigan in July. And since the podcast came out, people spoke up and they canceled their contract with Cops. A similar thing happened in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Cops is not going to be shooting there anymore because of the podcast. And, you know, I'm glad people are listening and make informed choices.
Dan, thank you.
Thanks so much. My pleasure.
Dan Taberski is the host of the podcast Running From Cops, the third season of the Headlong series. Here's something that we don't necessarily say a lot, but you should listen to this because it's pretty great, and there's way more highlights than we've given you here. And while we've got you here, please do not forget to sign up for the On the Media newsletter, which our producers put together every week. It manages to be both bizarre and actually informative. And if that sounds appealing, and it should, head over right now to onthemedia.org/newsletter to sign up. That's onthemedia.org/newsletter.